Hey everybody, Mark Ashton here, coming to you on May 26th with your Project 4-4 readings from the Song of Songs. And I want to ask you a question today. Do you have any books on sex in your library? I know I do. Here's one that I've got, Pure Pleasure by the Farrells and the Conways. Very good book. I could highly recommend this book on sex. But one of the places that you don't expect to find a book on sex is right here. Like right smack in the middle of your Bible, and that's exactly what we have in the book Song of Songs. Now, this is one of Solomon's books. It's the last of Solomon's books that we're going to be reading. And to be honest, Orthodox Jewish men aren't even allowed to read the book Song of Songs until they've reached a mature age because the content of it is just so hot. They don't want them to get, you know, all steamy before it's time. So while the book Song of Songs is not nearly as graphic as some of the stuff that's written today about love and marriage, this book is without question erotic. I mean, sensual is just about the only word that you can use to describe this book when you're reading it. It's a love poem that stirs both the imagination and the blood of people who read it. This book is different than any other book that you are going to read in the Bible. The earliest Jewish rabbis tried to explain it by saying, well, it's in the canon of the Old Testament because it's symbolic of God and Israel and their relationship together. And then later on, New Testament writers said, no, it's actually symbolic of Christ and the church and their relationship with one another. And I read this book and I say, what, are you nuts? I mean, it just starts in right at the beginning with kissing. And then it moves on to fantasy. And then it goes on to marriage and the honeymoon, and it's explicit about the stuff that happens there. There is symbolism in this book, to be sure, but if you need me to explain it, well, you should just go ask your father. He'll explain it better than I could. Anyway, this book is about human love and sex, sex. It highlights that sex is good in the marriage context. Yearning is good. Playfulness is good. Pet names are good. Highlighting parts of the body and complimenting them is good. The act itself is good. And not just for procreation. This is not just for making babies. It is good for the pure pleasure that is involved there. Now, this flies in the face of what many people think of sex, especially the way that the church talks about it. Usually the warnings are against extramarital sex, and they're so strong that Christians get scared of sex, or they think it's gross, you know, like, sex is gross, so save it for the one you love. You know, that's the message the church way too often gives. But the Song of Songs combats that idea fiercely. It's a great book. The thing that's a little bit freaky to me is that it made the cut to get into the Bible. Song of Songs is actually not a song, it's a compilation of many songs. We really don't know the plot line or who's singing the line of each song. Interpreters use those words lover, beloved, and friends that you see written into your New International Version in order to help us understand who might be singing that, but it's actually not there in the original Hebrew. And so, we don't actually know even who's singing which line. We don't know what the storyline is between all of the lines of the songs. We don't even know where the songs begin and end. It's kind of like going to watch a musical, and all you get to see are the songs that are done in the musical, and not the plot line that's in between. That's what it's like reading the Song of Songs. Now, people will write different plot lines in between the lines of Song of Songs in order to try and figure out something that makes sense. One very credible one is found in Willington's Complete Guide to Bible Knowledge. And here the author suggests that the Song of Songs is like a three-act play. Act one, we meet Cinderella, who lived with her family in Shulam, a town about 50 miles north of Jerusalem. There they maintain a vineyard that she takes care of at the behest of her family. She gets rid of the little foxes. She gets a deep tan from working outside all of the time. And one sunny day, a mysterious stranger comes to the vineyard and he wins the heart of the Shulamite girl. She didn't know he was really Solomon in disguise because he was wearing the disguise of a shepherd. She asked about his flocks, and he answered evasively, and then he just kind of disappeared after expressing his love for her. Well, Solomon, who had many wives and concubines, maybe he was troubled, wondering, could I win the heart of a girl if she didn't know that I was the big king? And so he disguised himself as a shepherd to figure this out. Well, Act 2 begins when this mysterious stranger professes his love for the maiden and then leaves, but promises that he'll return for her. During his absence, she dreams about him on two occasions, about him coming in the middle of the night, and she wakens with him there, or she wakens with him knocking on the door in the middle of the night. In both of the dreams, he disappears mysteriously. She goes running out looking for her, but she wonders, will he ever return? Then there's Act 3. The mighty monarch arrives. One day in this little town of Shulam, they receive the electrifying news that King Solomon himself is coming to town in all of his glory. Well, the woman is so lovesick, she doesn't care who's coming to town. She's not even going to go out to see him. And her friends make her go out to see him, and then when she's invited into the chariot, she finds out that this King Solomon is actually her beloved little shepherd. And he says, you know what, I want you to come and be my true love. Now, I still have 60 wives and 80 concubines, but I'd like for you to be my one true love. He invites her to come up with him and promises to care for her little sister. And when she's placed in the king's chariot that's made of all of this fine material, she decides to go back with him and his 60 mighty swordsmen and wind up living happily ever after. Well, that's one possible interpretation. Other ones think that Solomon's not involved at all, that maybe it was just written from his perspective. Other people think that perhaps there was really a woman and a shepherd, and the imagery about Solomon is just her belief that he's a great and mighty king. Whatever way you interpret it, the Song of Songs is still about the very same thing. It's that sex is good in a marriage context. And if you're married, I encourage you today to have more sex in obedience of the Bible. If not, you may want to hang off on even reading the Song of Solomon and look forward to experiencing that thrill in marriage. God bless you all. I don't think you'll ever hear me say anything like this in another accelerator, so I hope you've enjoyed this one.